It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast on a Thursday. Dan Lobby, Mary Kay Cabot. We are going to do a Hey Mary Kay edition of the podcast today. And we are going to start with the topic of the day. Long awaited. It finally happened. Nick Chubb's contract was restructured today on Thursday. So, you know, Andrew Berry said he was going to do it. He did it right before the offseason program starts. And that's where we're going to start here, Mary Kay. Mavro in Cbus, one of our long timers. Hey, Mary Kay. Do you feel Nick Chubb's restructuring and him agreeing, does it lead you to believe he feels he has a good chance to be back in time to hit many of the incentives in his contract?
It's a great question. It is a great question. I think what this contract does is it gives him the opportunity to continue to rehab and work his way back, but then also to hit these incentives when he does come back. So he must think that he's got some makeable incentives for when he does return. Otherwise, they would be dragging this out a little bit longer and trying to come to some kind of an agreement. So it's got to be things that he can hit and that he can do. And the truth of the matter for everyone is that no one knows. I'm sure Nick is confident that he's going to be able to make up that 12.2 million dollars, or most of it, that he was able to achieve this season. And I'm sure that the Browns are confident that he can do it. But the truth of the matter is, when you're coming off a second major, major knee reconstruction, no one knows exactly how that's going to go. But this contract really gives him an opportunity to get there, to try to get there. And above all, it gives the Browns a chance to show good faith in Nick Chubb and give him a chance to stay here and make that money. So I think it's a win-win. And I hope for everyone's sake, Nick ends up with $12.2 million at the end of the season.
And this was such, like this, we've talked about this, but, you know, this was so important to get done. And, you know, like your headline on Cleveland.com right now is how Browns GM Andrew Berry lived up to his vow to keep Nick Chubb on the roster with a win-win contract restructure. And, you know, Andrew never says anything. Like, he never tells us anything in these press conferences. He even openly jokes about it half the time before these press conferences start. So when he came out in that press conference after the season and made it very clear they were going to do what they needed to do to keep Nick on the roster, and then, of course, he lives up to that, it was just always different with Nick Chubb. So I think there's so much – this was so important to get this done, to just say to everybody, fans – players, coaches, this guy's going to be here. This guy's going to be around. Now, we don't know when he's going to be back and when he's going to look like Nick Chubb again, but we're not cutting the guy. We're going to make a little bit of a personal decision here, and we're going to make sure that Nick Chubb is a part of this football team. I think that really matters.
It really does. Some things are more important than money. And to maintain that relationship with Nick Chubb, to have the fans see how you're treating Nick Chubb, to see how his teammates are seeing how you're treating Nick Chubb, it's so vitally important. And even free agents across the league, this is how the Browns are going to do business. They are going to take care of a player who is, in many ways, the heart and soul of the football team. We all saw what happened on that magical night against the Jets when they clinched in week 17. And Nick goes out there with the Batman mask on, which I used that photo again because I think it just encapsulates everything about him and about the feeling the organization has for him. But we all saw what that meant to the fans We know when we look out there how many Nick Chubb jerseys there are. We know how the fans feel about him. So this was important for reasons other than money. And $12.2 million, although it sounds like a lot to many people, to most people, it really is a small price to pay to make sure that there is goodwill with Nick Chubb. This could not have ended badly. It just could not have. So now he does have a chance to make up that money. And if he's healthy, he'll make it. If he's not healthy, then he doesn't make it. And, you know, that's just business. There is a business side to it, but I think this is a win-win. They get some cap relief. They get, for this year, they get almost $9 million or more than $9 million, about $9.5 million in cap relief. That's helpful because they can use that to sign another player, extend another player. And Nick has incentives and goals and motivation to reach them.
Obviously, nobody wants to think about the ending with Nick Chubb. But if for some reason he's just not the same guy, if he's not, if it turns out this knee injury was ends up being something that just alters the path of his career, if there is an ending with Nick Chubb and the Browns in the near future, this makes it easier, I guess, because the Browns kept him. They did right by him. They gave him a chance to come back in a Browns uniform. And if it has to end, it probably ends on good terms, sort of like how Derrick Henry wasn't hurt, but how Derrick Henry ended in Tennessee, right? It was just time. And so he leaves, gets to say his farewell and goes to Baltimore, which we'll have to talk about that sometime this offseason. But this gives the opportunity, first and foremost, for Nick Chubb to have a great comeback and be a great story in a Cleveland Browns uniform. But also, if this does have to end down the road, you've made it a little easier for everyone, including Nick.
Yes, and I think the important thing to note here is the fact that this is the final year of the contract. So this doesn't go out for two more years or three more years. Heading into this season, he was heading into the final year of his contract and would have been hoping for some kind of an extension. And had they done a redo, they may have extended it for a couple of years and given him some more upfront money. And of course, the injury changed all of that. So it's going to be up to Nick what he can do physically, what he's able to do, how he can mount this comeback. And if he can go out there and get 1,000 yards and score 8 touchdowns and do all those kinds of things, then the future will look bright for him. And everybody is hoping for that for Nick Chubb. Anybody who's ever been around him, who's ever met him, knows how he's the heart and soul of the team. We've talked about this before. The players dedicated their season to Nick when he went down. They did not do that for anybody else when they went down. They didn't do that for Jack Conklin, who went down the week before that. They didn't do that for Deshaun Watson when he went down later. They did it for Nick Chubb, and that's a very special thing to do. And they also lived up to it. They made the playoffs in his honor, and it was just all representative of how everybody feels about this player.
Yeah, and I just think, you know, seeing guys walk in the Nick Chubb Georgia jerseys and the Nick Chubb t-shirts and all that, it was just kind of cool to see them do that all season. Now on the field, of course, now we're going to talk to Kevin next week. On Tuesday is when we're going to get a chance to talk to him. They're back in the building on Monday for the start of the offseason program. We'll also talk to Andrew next week too. So I don't expect that we're going to get any firm answers, but what do you think is a realistic expectation for Nick Chubb to be back on the field? I mean, even just practicing, when do you think we might see him in training camp, let alone on the field playing on a Sunday?
It's hard to say because with a normal ACL, you can get back now in 9 months. Now, he had the ACL part of the surgery in November, which would get him back potentially around September, start of the season, whatnot. But this is nothing like a routine surgery by any stretch of the imagination. That ACL surgery followed one in September where he had the MCL repaired and the meniscus repaired and other things going on in that knee. So this is not a regular comeback from an ACL where we could kind of pinpoint it. I would say that a realistic expectation is for him to miss sort of the first quarter-ish of the season. Maybe he misses the first 4 games or so and then works his way back in after that. I don't have any inside intel on that. I'm just guessing that he's not going to be ready for the start of the season based on what I've heard a little bit here and there, but just the time frame of trying to come back from this very, very devastating injury. So they're not going to rush him. They're going to give him the time that he needs. And then when he does come back, he might have to ramp up a little bit. So I think a realistic expectation would be for Nick to maybe come back and get 10 carries a game and maybe end up with 700 yards, something along those lines. But it's Nick Chubb. So he's a superhero. He could go out there and blow all of us away with what he's able to accomplish this season in the same way that he came back from the injury at Georgia.
Yeah, and you want to balance it too, because obviously, look, everybody would love it if Nick Chubb, you know, especially if the Browns open at home, right? If Nick Chubb comes out of the tunnel at Browns Stadium and he's playing in that week one. But ultimately, the goal is to play well beyond week 18. So if that means that you have to take a little slow with Nick Chubb and not bring him back until October, you want to have Nick Chubb at whatever his peak is going to look like. You want that to hit late November, early December, into January. That's when you really want peak Nick Chubb. So the temptation's going to be there to kind of put him out on the field, but we've seen that this team usually doesn't rush players back outside of Deshaun Watson in Indianapolis last year. But, you know, like I'm thinking back to Odell Beckham a few years ago in 2021. You know, they didn't really rush him to get him back on the field after he was unable to go in the opener that year. So I think it would be smart to kind of slow play it with Nick. As much as he'll want to get out there, as much as fans will want him out there, you want the best of Nick Chubb late in the season.
Yes, absolutely, because they intend to make a deeper playoff run this year. The goal, of course, is to win the AFC North and to not bow out of the playoffs in the wild card round this year. They want to go deeper into the playoffs. Of course, they want to win the Super Bowl. So you want Nick around for that, and you don't want to rush him back. That they don't need to do that. They have a nice stable of running backs right now in Jerome Ford, Pierre Strong. You've got Nyheim Hines, who's primarily a returner. You've got Dante Foreman. So they've got some backs. They can get the job done. They might draft a running back. I don't think it would come at 54, but I could see them adding a running back in the draft, possibly another free agent running back. So this is not something where they are counting on him to carry the load in week one. This is something where you can allow him to work his way back in the way that he needs to and be going strong in December and January.
Okay, let's talk travel. Jeff Sapisi in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. Now, we don't really have an answer to this, to his specific question, but this kind of gets us a chance to talk a little bit about the possibility of playing in London. He says, "Hey, Mary Kay, as we speculate about the Browns playing in London, has anyone looked at how teams playing games in England or Germany fared in their next game in the U.S.? Is there data showing that winners and losers in the non-U.S. games suffered for the trip?" And I don't have any of that information handy. I can tell you most teams take their bye after that trip. I know that's what the Browns did in 2017. There was one team, it was either Baltimore or Jacksonville this year, did not take their bye after an overseas trip. But most teams do that trip and then they have a bye the next week. So I think that's mostly what you would find if you looked into that. But that being said, we know they're not going to Brazil. I mean, if they do go to London, if they do have to go to London, what challenges, and you've done that trip before, what challenges do you think that presents for this football team if that actually ends up on their schedule?
Well, it is a logistical challenge. It is a long flight. You have to go through a lot of hoops to go over to London to play a game. You've got to get all your equipment over there. You've got to get all your people over there. You're going all the way across the pond to play a game. But they're used to it. This is a team that travels well. It's probably not all that much worse than heading out to Seattle for a game, because you can get to London in probably 7 hours or so on a flight. So it's really not all that bad. And with London, there is no language barrier. I think that might help. And the NFL has its mojo down in London. They know exactly what they're doing over there. They know where the teams are staying. They have the bus situation down. They've got the practice schedule down. So I actually don't think it would be too bad. I think Brazil would have been potentially very, very challenging in terms of all the logistics, all the travel, the language, and everything else that you can possibly imagine, including, you know, we've heard things like, you know, the security is such that maybe they would not have been able to leave their hotel at all or very often. And it wouldn't be that way in London. Now, they will have a curfew in London, but they'll still have an opportunity to go out a little bit and enjoy London. And that's cool. It's an amazing place. So I think that they'll do fine there. And once again, they've built up some travel chips, this team has. They know how to be on the road together. They know how to hold it together. It's also a very veteran team. It's very veteran in that they're really stocking up on the 30-somethings. I haven't written about that yet, but I will be writing about that one of these days. They've got a lot of guys who are 30 or above on this football team. So you don't necessarily have just a ton of super young guys that you're going to have to worry about being out after curfew and doing those kinds of things. I think they've got a very, very good veteran leadership group that will be able to help keep things together on an overseas trip like this.
Okay, so while Mary Kay was talking, I was doing some very poor research. This would not hold up if I was like writing a paper on this, but I Googled it. And this is a story from 2022 on the Action Network. So it's a little bit outdated, but as of the writing of this story, 60 teams had played in London since I think they're going back to 2007, and 55 had a bye the week after returning. So most teams have chosen to take the bye, and then the stats they have from those five teams as of October 2022 was, hold on here, I got to scroll down and find it. I scrolled up. That was a mistake. Post-London teams without a bye went 2-2-1 against the spread and 2-3 straight up. So I don't know. And I don't know those, you know, they have a list of the matchups. So I don't know if it was, you know, should they have won the game? Shouldn't they have won the game? I guess if teams went 2-2-1 against the spread, that kind of tells you it was about even with teams coming back. So I don't know what the Browns will do. If they do have to go to London, it might depend on when the game is, if they want another early bye or a late bye or something like that. But I think what I would be most curious about is when they decide to travel, because some teams wait until Thursday. I think that's what the Browns did in 2017. Some teams leave right away. I'm always curious sort of what teams do. And if the Browns end up being the team that, you know, Jacksonville had back-to-back games overseas last year. So would the Browns be in the second leg of a back-to-back or something against Jacksonville? I think those are the things that would have a bigger impact on this team than maybe the game after the London game. It's sort of, what are they getting into? When do they travel? All of that stuff.
My gut tells me that they would leave earlier than later in the Kevin Stefanski regime, because we know he likes to get his players out and away from all the distractions and from their families and get honed in on the game. And we know that when they had two long trips last season in Denver and LA, they stayed out in LA for the whole week leading up to that. So my gut feeling is that they would probably go out by Tuesday or Wednesday to get ready for this game. And one of the reasons why I think they have, or some of the reasons why I think they have a good chance to get this game, first of all, they really wanted Brazil. They didn't get Brazil. So maybe this is a little consolation prize. You don't get Brazil, but you're going to get London. And then it's really down to three teams, the Patriots, the Jets, and the Browns, because the Jaguars' other home opponents have conflicts. Some are already playing in an international game. Three of them, of course, are division foes, and you really don't want to do that over there. One is the Packers, and we know now, of course, they're going to Brazil to face the Eagles. So you whittle it all down, and it's really Patriots, Jets, Browns. Now, nothing's written in stone yet, but that gives them more than a 33% chance to make this trip to London. So we'll have to see how it goes. Nobody's saying anything yet. They're very mum on these games. They really want to make a big splash when they make their announcements. They want there to be a lot of excitement and buildup and hype surrounding it. So it's hard to get any information on these things, but I do think they have a pretty decent chance. And I think it would be exciting. I think it would be exciting for them. I think they're ready for it. I like the matchup, the Jaguars, the Browns. I mean, you just look back to that game last year, such a close and tight game after the third quarter when the Browns broke away to 21-7. And then it became a 31-27 game that the Browns won. So I think Trevor Lawrence going against fellow Clemson alum Deshaun Watson would be exciting. You've got some good storylines on both sides. And I think it's just a matter of time before we hear that it could be the Browns.
I do want to mention something here since we're talking about Jacksonville. In my newsletter for, I forget what day it was, but you know, we do a newsletter for our Football Insider subscribers, and you go to cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner, to get info on that, as I say every podcast. And I ranked the travel cities for this year, the non-AFC North travel cities, and I put Jacksonville next to last ahead of Washington, just because in Washington you're nowhere near DC. And I wrote something along the lines of, I honestly don't know what's in Jacksonville. I just haven't spent a lot of time in Jacksonville. And our buddy Ken in Florida responded, Dan, you don't know what's in Jacksonville? Come on. We have the Players Championship, the Atlantic Ocean Beach, the St. John's River, the Jacksonville Zoo, and lots of outdoor shopping and restaurants. So there you go, Mary Kay. Plenty to do in Jacksonville. For whatever reason, whenever we've gone to Jacksonville, I've like stayed by the airport and just haven't spent time in the city. And I think we went there in the preseason, so I'm usually in and out quick for those games. The last time we were there, I don't think I went the COVID year. I don't know. I've just never experienced Jacksonville, I guess. That's a me problem, not a Jacksonville problem.
I have golfed at the, I golfed at the TPC course that he's talking about, the famous course. And that was fun. That was back. I don't know if I had any children at that point, but that was back when I actually had time to golf a little bit. I don't really have much of an opportunity to do that. Not because I have small children at home anymore, obviously. They're in their 20s, but I just got away from it. You know, with everything that you do with kids, you're in the thick of it now with lacrosse games and gymnastics meets and everything. So I just never had time to golf. But I did golf on one of those Browns trips, and it was amazing. So fun. Other than that, I really haven't spent much time there myself either. So I will say that if I had my choice between Jacksonville this season and London, I'm taking London 7 days of the week. London is amazing. And if any Browns fans can get over there for this game, try to do it. It's just absolutely priceless.
Yeah, and listen, that's not an insult to Jacksonville to say that you would rather go to London than Jacksonville. I'm sure Jacksonville is a wonderful place. And if that game is in December in Jacksonville, it's going to be even better for us. But yes, I do think most people, I think even Ken would agree, that most people would probably prefer a trip to London over a trip to Jacksonville. But our apologies to the city of Jacksonville. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit of draft and some other questions on our Hey Mary Kay edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. I'm back on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Dan Lobby, Mary Kay Cabot. Hey Mary Kay edition of the pod. I said we were going to talk a little draft. Now, if you haven't been paying attention, if you're not subscribed, we are back doing draft pods with Tim Bielik, who is great on the draft. You name any player in the draft, he can tell you anything about him. And then Lance Reisland, who's great when it comes to film, and certainly is not afraid to talk about his draft crushes. So check those out. They're usually going up on Fridays. We had one go up last week. We talked receivers and tight ends. And this week, I'm actually going to record it a little bit later today with them. We're going to talk defensive line, edge rushers and tackles. So and we do a mock draft every week. So make sure you check that out. Just get subscribed on the podcast. So Mary Kay, a draft question here from Mike Parker in Chester, Maryland. Hey, Mary Kay, what would the perfect Browns draft look like to you? And it's like almost impossible to attach names to these picks. But if you had to say like a position that they fill or how many starters they get out of this draft, something like that, what would make you come away from this draft feeling like, okay, that was a good weekend for the Browns?
You know, I actually have some strong thoughts on that. I think that a good draft would include a defensive end as high as you can get him, So I would probably be looking for a good pass rushing defensive end, that diamond in the rough that turns out to be even better than some of the first round defensive ends that get drafted. So that's who I would be looking for mostly at number 54. It's a premium position, so you have to get them as high as you possibly can. Then I would still be looking for another wide receiver. You can't have too many good wide receivers and too many good weapons on this football team, and it's going to be time to start restocking a little. You don't know how long Amari necessarily will be here. So I think that's an area that they have to keep working on. And then tight end, they lost Harrison Bryant. They need to add to the pile there. So I would be trying to find a tight end. Maybe you have to wait until the fifth round for that. Maybe you try to trade back up into the fourth round where they don't have a pick and try to get one there. I would go running back, but you can get a running back later. So maybe you find one in the sixth round, maybe even the seventh. Maybe you wait and you sign one as an undrafted free agent. But those are the positions that I think I would be focusing on in this draft.
I am still, I have a feeling like a tight end is going to be in the mix early. But I still am very much leaning towards, I would like to see them throw another dart at wide receiver. You know, they kind of keep doing it and look, it hasn't worked, but you know, you kind of keep throwing the darts until you find one. And I would love to see them try to find that late round gem, you know, like the, you know, like Puka Nacua. Doesn't have to necessarily be a rookie of the year type of player, but just somebody who can come in early, come in right away, and just sort of be the one of the wide receiver steals of this draft, because it is a deep wide receiver draft and there's probably going to be a little run on them, but there's got to be somebody that they can find who meshes really well with Deshaun, can do the things they need them to do, and you know, the scramble drills, things like that, speed, all of that stuff. I would just love to see them unearth that type of player, maybe in that second or third round. That would, I still feel like that's a priority for this team.
Well, there's one that I wrote about for today. I wrote about three players who have come in for those top 30 visits. And one of them was Malachi Corley. And he's from Western Kentucky. And he does have a little bit of that Deebo Samuel vibe to him, where you can use him as a wide back. Sometimes wide receiver, sometimes running back. He's great with yards after catch. They don't have anybody quite like him on the roster. And he would just bring that different element, that dual threat element. So he's someone that I think you could actually get at number 54. So that's a place to look for a guy like that. I also wrote about Tavondre Sweat. And the key thing about Tavondre Sweat right now is the fact that he got a DUI last Sunday. And how will that impact him in this draft? He's a defensive tackle, and I did say defensive end here, but I would be fine also with a pass rushing defensive tackle. I just think they need to add to that defensive line in a pressure kind of way. But he's really good at that. He's big. He takes up a lot of space. He can be explosive off the ball. He can get to the quarterback. He can stuff the run, and I could just see him. His tape, to me, looked good. I could see him working right next to Myles Garrett and almost becoming dominant there inside, potentially. But he went and got a DUI, or DWI, whatever you want to call it, on Sunday. And now it's going to be a matter of how will that impact his draft status. I think the Browns are going to have to go back and take a little bit of a deeper dive into the character, talk to a few more people, talk to his position coach, find somebody else, talk to his strength coach, whoever you can talk to, and see if there is some kind of a pattern here, or if this was such an isolated incident and he went out one day and he made a horrible mistake. That's what the Browns are going to have to figure out. If they have a comfort level with him, he could become a bargain for them in one of these rounds. So he's someone who could go in the fourth round potentially. Maybe now he slips to the fifth because people are worried about this situation. But certainly he's someone from a skill set standpoint that I think would look good in a Browns uniform.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that, you know, it raises red flags in normal times, right? But it raises even more when you're in the draft process. And basically it's a, you know, 4-month interview process. And it's just like, just don't don't screw up in these 4 months. Don't do something stupid in these 4 months. And so when that happened, when a player does something like that anytime, you know, I don't want to downplay it any other time, but especially in the draft process, it's like, what could you have possibly been thinking? And what does that say about you? You know, how are you going to make decisions long-term, especially when you're making money and, you know, you've got a lot of downtime in the NFL and all of that. So, I mean, you're right. The Browns, that's the sort of thing that if it's a one-time deal, if it was just a one-time mistake and the player understands it and isn't going to do it again, you can take advantage of that and maybe find value. But also you've got to make sure that you've dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's in your background work on him.
Yeah, and that's probably not easy when you're talking about trying to figure out if a player has an issue with alcohol, because that is a red flag. I mean, when you get a DWI, that's a red flag that there's something going on there that you might not want to be dealing with over the long haul. So they've got to figure that out. And I think it's important. And I think that they need to take it very seriously. I think all teams do. And if you think that maybe it was just a mild thing, maybe you bring him in and you make sure that he starts getting some kind of help to make sure that doesn't become more of a problem. So that's something to keep an eye on. The other player that I wrote about in this, and I didn't talk about this when I mentioned the positions I was looking at, they also brought in Tennessee quarterback Joe Milton. And that's a very, very interesting top 30 visit because they're pretty well stocked at quarterback. They've got 4 quarterbacks right now going into the offseason program in Deshaun Watson, Jameis Winston, Tyler Huntley, and Dorian Thompson-Robinson. But I've been writing about this for a while, and I think it's important to note. Deshaun Watson isn't the only one coming off of an injury. DTR is as well. He's coming off of a hip injury, and when I caught up with him in the locker room one day, he said, "I messed up my hip." And it seemed a bit foreboding. I don't know where that thing is right now, but I think there's something to the fact that they're looking at quarterbacks and that they brought Tyler Huntley in, even though they also had 4 quarterbacks last year. I just think that they're going to slow play it with DTR and give him an opportunity to get where he needs to be. So I think that's where Joe Milton comes in. Big quarterback, big armed quarterback, developmental guy. And if they get him here to Cleveland, I think he's somebody that they'll be excited to work with.
I want to spend more time on the 4 quarterbacks, and especially, you know, since you mentioned the Joe Milton visit, which I think is a little, I don't know. I don't know if Joe Milton is, I don't know. That's a different topic. But we've discussed it a little bit on the pod, and I know Andrew addressed this at the owners' meetings. Carrying 4 quarterbacks isn't anything new for this team, and especially with guys coming off injuries. You know, you want to have 4 quarterbacks because I think fans need to remember you've got, you know, a month and a half of training camp. You've got 3 preseason games. Like, you have to have guys who can take reps and who can play in these games, and without, you don't want to wear out your starters. So that's part of the thinking with some of these moves. But Tyler Huntley isn't just any other run-of-the-mill 4th quarterback. Like, he's a guy who's played. He's a guy who started. He's a guy that has, you know, he's won a couple of games in the NFL. This isn't Kellen Mond as your 4th quarterback. So as I've thought about it more, I do think it's really interesting that they went out and landed on Tyler Huntley as their 4th quarterback. Because I don't know that he's ever a starter in this league full-time, but he's also not just some developmental guy or some practice squad guy or something like that. He's a legitimate NFL backup, at least.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've been writing about this, and I wrote about this in one of my Hey MKs. The Browns were very surprised to be able to get him. They thought, and I think he thought, that he was going to Pittsburgh. And when they ended up acquiring both Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, that kind of closed the door for Tyler Huntley. And he found himself without a chair when the music stopped. And I do think that the Browns felt very fortunate to get him at a bargain basement price of the veteran minimum. So he's somebody to bring in here to, once again, to develop, to see what he can do in this system. Somebody that has some crossover skill set, some dual threat skill set, who has a lot of running in his repertoire. And as you mentioned, not your run-of-the-mill third, fourth quarterbacks. So it will be interesting because with a guy like that, if you have a surplus of quarterbacks on your roster, sometimes someone will be willing to come and give you a draft pick for one of those guys at some point along the line. So I think that could work into it as well.
And it does raise the question of DTR and kind of where he's at and what mm-hmm. this injury was. We're all sort of, there's some speculating, there's some trying to read the tea leaves of what we're seeing. And again, we're talking to Kevin next week. We're talking to Andrew next week. I don't know if they would give us any more info on that injury. Kevin actually threw out at the combine that, hey, DTR could be the number two. That was pre-Jameis, obviously. But you do worry a little bit. Just a hip is one of those things that you just kind of worry about, you know, until you actually see the guy back out on the field. Hip injuries can be a little worrisome.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. And when we asked Andrew Berry about DTR at the owners' meeting several weeks ago, he did say you have to be very cautious with your guys coming off of injuries. And it was just cryptic enough to have to wonder, is he going to be ready to go anytime soon? Do they need a guy like Joe Milton to come in here and be a camp quarterback, maybe start one of the preseason games if necessary? So we'll have to see how this plays out.
Okay, there we go. A Hey Mary Kay edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Those questions from our Football Insider subscribers, cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page to get involved in that and also become one of our text subscribers, which is where we get those questions I mentioned. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We will have a draft pod coming up a little bit later this week. Find us on Instagram, search Orange and Brown Talk. Find us on YouTube, search Cleveland Browns on cleveland.com. Mary Kay, I'll talk to you later.
Sounds great.